bastard, she said. Ty Rayana pushed inside the room. The tan skin around her eyes was creased with worry as she grabbed a handful of the ribbons.
All the notes say the same thing.
Welcome back, Empress. I won't be ignored. Your presence is humbly requested at the Towers of the Long Now.
Nero's residence. Lana stepped through the maze of arrows that had pierced themselves into a pattern on the floor.
He's not very subtle, is he?
No, Rhee said. Madmen seldom are. Chapter 6 Alyosha. He tried to call out, but the pressure on his chest was too much. Last thing he remembered, he and Kara had taken shelter behind a sand dune. He must have been thrown in the blast.
Kara, where was she? He hoped there was magic in the world. He wouldn't die. She wouldn't either. The pain was unbearable. Stupid. He was wavering in and out of awareness and could hear wailing, people calling for one another, tiny vibrations in the debris that surrounded him. He clawed his way into consciousness.
Here, here, here,
he tried to call out. Instead, he just thought it.
Kara, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Then darkness took him again. He heard a motor, the familiar sound of all-terrain wheels spinning their way through the sand.
Far away? Maybe not. His hearing was still shot from the blast, but at least the cloak of darkness lifted.
His eyes hurt from the light. He blinked, but all he could see was the blinding brightness.
Alyosha, Pavel's voice. I've been looking for hours.
Pavel's ridiculous robo-voice that he'd never, ever changed to sound more human.
Pavel had survived. He'd found him.
Ali tried to answer, but he coughed instead. His eyes ached from the light.
Where's Kara?
He managed to whisper.
I haven't found her, Pavel said. I'm hooked into the database and monitoring the descriptions of survivors. I came for you first.
What happened?
His head throbbed. Everything hurt. He pushed himself up to his elbow only to fall down again. At least he had all his pieces. He went one by one through every limb and figured he could move each one when the time came. At least there was that. He lifted his head and saw there were soldiers sorting through what was left of the camp. Debris had somehow made it all the way into the dunes 30 meters out.
What happened?
The WFC dropped an M-bomb, presumably to free the prisoners.
Ali nodded. It was the first one that dropped when he and Kara were running for the dunes.
But there was a second one, he said.
The explosion was the last thing he remembered before he and Kara were torn apart.
A second bomb was deployed by the Uniforce over the center of Nau Fruma. There's now a skirmish in the marketplace in the aftermath.
So who has boots on the ground?
Apparently everyone, Pavel said.
Slowly, things were taking shape. Silhouettes, colors, moving forms against a scrim of white. A cargo craft lifted off the ground above the camp. Packed so full of people, someone was about to fall out. They were Raetans and Fontesians, people he'd been interned with. They were escaping. Thank Vodhan. It was the same type of cargo craft he'd boarded as a kid during the Raetan evacuation, a WFC vehicle. Lots of kids from the Ray had joined up when they first came through. He remembered watching them go, jealous that someone could just leave the Ray behind. Ali had wanted to leave, too, abandon that little crap town and leave behind everything and everyone in it. Most of all, his dad. but he hadn't joined the WFC. Even at that age, he was done with Raetons and Fontesians. Done living under Vodhan's rules and feeling guilt every time something felt good. So he'd gone and passed for a collusion. Joined the Uniforce instead. And now, the very WFC he'd fancied himself too good for had come to save him. It was a sign. From Vodhan, maybe. Or maybe just a big fat coincidence. But it didn't matter. He'd take it.
We need to find Kara.
Ali pulled himself to his feet and dusted off, weaving back and forth as he made his way over the dunes. The sand was definitely shifting below him. But it felt like the world was spinning. He was dizzy, and practically clawed his way up to get a better vantage point of the camp. There are aid workers arriving now, Pavel continued, following him. He might have said more, but they crested a dune and took in the view. Past the camp was the town of Nau Fruma, now teeming with screaming civilians. Ali saw people clutching each other, some with bloody limbs or torn antennae, or bruised faces or bleeding gills. But no Kara. Nau Fruma had always been a diverse hub of trade and diplomacy. But now it struck Ali particularly like a shaken microcosm of the whole universe all in one tiny marketplace, thrown together and turned upside down, no one knowing who to trust or where to run. It was still night, but on Nau Fruma, it never got completely dark, just a tepid gray. The mass hysteria in the streets made it seem, for a moment, like the smoky, dusty air of the moon had come alive with flailing, crying tentacles. Kara. She could be anywhere in this madness, captured by a Uniforce soldier, or in conflict with the WFC, or just swept away by the stampede of panicked Nau Frumans and freed prisoners. Why had he pushed her like that? Talked all that tahis about her coming back, told her what to do. Ali knew as well as anyone what it was like when people told you what to do, who to be, made you twist yourself inside out so that your own soul was unrecognizable. The fighting had torn through the marketplace and, like a storm, passed on to other neighborhoods. The crowds had thinned as people found the med stations that were popping up, or fled as some soldiers went down and the first wave of the WFC took off, escorted by a blaze of escape pods holding Raetons and Fontesians who'd been innocently detained. Could Kara be in one of them? Ali was cursed. No. No. He was just really goddamn stupid. Only he could have messed this up the way he had. It was the second time she'd saved him, and he'd pushed her away. If he just shut his eyes, maybe he could feel where she was. Maybe they'd come together somehow, through a magnetism he couldn't explain or describe. A heat? A need? A longing? He should have told her when he had the chance, how important she was, how much she meant to him, instead of running his damn mouth off. There were 1,000 other things he should have said. I'll never leave. I'll never give up. I'll never let them hurt you. So many nevers. He thought his heart and lungs would burst from the weight of all of them. It wasn't working. Vin would have told him to visualize. But with every second, the dread clawed at him. He pushed through the thinning crowds but couldn't find her anywhere. You may have suffered a concussion, Pavel was saying. He didn't even know how long the droid had been talking to him. Hadn't realized that P was still by his side. If you won't seek treatment, I can consult my limited medical database. The droid stalled out. Ali turned, just in time to see a Uniforce soldier grabbing Pavel and attempting to power him down. Ali didn't think. He lunged. Muscles he didn't know existed screamed as the man brought his scanner down on Ali's shoulder and shoved him backward onto the ground before he had a chance to fight back. Don't move. The guy had a stunner drawn now, aimed right at Ali's chest. He loomed over him, and Ali thought he looked like one of the prison guards. Perhaps he was.
Excuse me, Pavel said, polite, more than the guy deserved. His eye lights were still blinking like crazy. There is no need for such roughhousing. In response, the soldier swung his foot and kicked Pavel over. The robot tipped sideways into the dirt, eyes flickering red as his attachments flailed. When Ali moved to help, the soldier struck him once in the ribs with the butt of his scanner.
I said, don't move.
Even when he pulled it back, Ali could still feel where the blow had landed. Ali curled in on himself and tried to breathe through the pain. Half his face was in the dirt. His eyes had adjusted by now, and he could see this piece of Tahi's. Ali wanted to charge him, to rip his goddamn throat out. But the stunner was pointed right at him. And that's when he saw it. Her. All he could see was an arm, a hand, a body pinned beneath a fallen pillar. A bag. Her bag.
Kara!
He screamed again, trying to pull himself up, but the uniformed soldier shoved him right back down. Ali felt his strength flooding out of him in a wave of terror. She wasn't moving. It couldn't be her. It wasn't her. It wasn't Kara. No. It wasn't her. Ali crawled toward her, only 20 feet from where they'd just been standing. The soldier went after him, booted him back down into the rubble. Dust from the rubble flew everywhere, blinding Ali.
Get the fuck off me!
Ali shouted, rotating and swiping at the guy, feeling the stunner shoot him in the arm, which numbed him for a second. Where was Pavel? He'd lost track of him for now. But still, he swiveled, dragged himself in the direction of the rubble pile, the backpack, the girl's body, the arm. It wasn't her. It couldn't be. Kara was alive somewhere. She was not this limp arm, this broken thing. But when he got closer, he gasped, choking on burning hot dust. The prayer beads were clutched in her hand, tangled in her fingers. Pavel, tell me it's not her. The droid righted himself as his eye lights flickered in and out. He stuck a thin attachment that looked like a thermometer into the ground. I detect traces of her DNA. There was a blur of motion and sound, a screaming ripping through him, ripping through time and space so that his scream, his pain, existed everywhere at once. Ali yelled Kara's name as he clawed at the pile of rubble on top of her.
Put your hands on the ground where I can see them, a soldier said from behind.
He pressed the cool metal of the stunner down hard on the side of Ali's head so that it bit into his temple. Ali lifted his hands. There was no coming back from a stun in the head. He had seen it in the ray. Guys fried after a run-in with the Uniforce. Crazy outbursts. Disorientation. Anger they just couldn't get a lockdown on.
Don't move, the soldier said, pulling one of Ali's hands down behind his back.
His eyes were still locked on Kara's hand underneath a ton of concrete. He made himself pliable as the soldier grabbed his other hand, about to join them behind his back. If he timed it just right, he could spin around. The guy was probably wearing the same kind of holster Ali used to wear when he'd been part of the Uniforce. It came equipped with a standard-issue blade. Could he get to it in time?
Perhaps I can assist, Pavel said just as the soldier tried to join Ali's hands. He was processed in the camp just 2 days ago, and he was held.
The soldier moved his stunner off Ali's head and shocked Pavel. A blue web of electricity crawled up his body. His eyes flickered, then went out. Ali knew he couldn't feel pain, not in the same way a human could. But it sure as hell looked painful. Ali used the opportunity to break free and spin around. He leapt up and kicked the soldier on instinct, brought the heel of his foot as hard as he could across the side of the guy's knee. It bent exactly the way it wasn't supposed to, and he cried out in pain as he went down. Ali jumped up, and the world flipped. They'd switched places now. The soldier fumbled for the stunner, but Ali kicked it out of his hand, then drove his foot between the soldier's ribs. That was payback for earlier. And,
for Pavel. He kicked again, more payback. He was enjoying this, seeing a man struggle and wearing the very uniform he'd been so proud to put on himself. Suddenly, it wasn't a stranger Allie was kicking, attacking, with everything he had in him. It was himself on the floor. That stupid kid from the Ray who ran away from home and joined the Uniforce. Too weak to be himself. Thinking the only way to belong was to blend in. Everything Allie had done brought him here, to this moment. And he wanted to destroy himself. The Uniforce, the memory of everyone who had died because of him, or in spite of him. All the memories, all the horrors, all the unfairness, everything. But most of all, he wanted to destroy Kara. Not the actual Kara, never her, but the thought of her. He knew if he turned his head just slightly, he'd catch an image of those prayer beads. Allie did. He looked. The grief wailed away, condensed until there was nothing left but fury. Now he could hardly see through the rage that surged through and around him. He looked back at the soldier on the ground and landed the heel of his boot square on the guy's face. Didn't matter whose military you fought for. Because all these Chartois were the same. Boots on the ground in neutral territory. Kick. Just to terrorize people, to fuck with them, just to make themselves feel big. Kick. They invaded everything, even in the name of peace. Nothing would be the same after this war. They'd started all over again. Blood got on Allie's boot. The soldier lifted his hand, silently asking for mercy. Allie drew his leg back to kick again.
Alyosha,
Pavel said. He'd righted himself for the second time, but something about the droid's movements was off. He wobbled, and his robotic voice came out distant, like he was calling him via holo from another planet.
Enough.
Nothing would ever be enough. But Allie nodded just the same, and stopped like P had told him to. He moved from one body to the other, and kneeled before Kara. He tried again to dig her out, pawing at slabs of concrete, sweat mingling with tears, running down his face so he could taste the salt in his mouth. An organic memory assaulted him, throwing rocks into the shallow river basin when he heard Ma and Alina had died. The current would sweep the rocks away, around the bend and out of sight. He couldn't hold on to anything. Another craft landed then. Allie felt it in the vibrations of the air, in the odd electric silence, in the vividness of the craft's beams. It wasn't a cargo craft. It was Ashbuli class, an attack craft. He turned to Pavel, but the droid was frozen in place, his eye lights dark. He'd been fried. Allie strained to see in the craft's beams, lighting the dusty darkness and muting everything into one haze. There, before his eyes, a bunch of soldiers streamed out of the Ashbuli. Raytan soldiers who were part of the WFC, fanning out in a second wave. He thought of the uprisings he'd been told of as a kid. These were heroes. But they'd come too late to save him or anything he cared about. A soldier approached slowly. "Are you okay?" she asked in Raytan. Her hands gripped her stunner firmly, but she pointed it to the ground, away from him. When Allie shook his head, she said, "When the Uniforce manages a second wave, they'll raise this place to the ground." Fire. It was a common enough Uniforce tactic if a territory was too far gone. It killed enemy combatants, but it killed any of their own remaining survivors as well, so their tech couldn't be used against them, and so they'd have no way of giving up sensitive intel. Allie looked one more time at Kara's limp hand. The collusion didn't bury their dead. They burned them. "It's not safe here," the soldier told him. "If you come with us, you'll be granted refugee status." Allie laughed. Pain spiked up his lungs. Been there, done that, he said. I'm not going to be your refugee. I'll be your next recruit.
Chapter 7 Rhiannon. Rhi's anger was like a raging forest fire. She didn't dare extinguish it, but instead imagined it shrinking smaller and smaller, compressing it to a tight sphere that she could fit into the palm of her hand and hide away. For now. She'd need to call upon that anger later. It brought her purpose and clarity that propelled her forward in times when she needed the motivation most. But this was the time for diplomacy and strategy. She didn't just need to win the battle. She needed to win the war. Now she approached the towers of the Long Now with Dalin and Lana on either side. The towers were oppressive and extravagant all at once. The seemingly perfect home for Nero himself. This is unwise, Dalin warned, though he'd made his stance clear before they'd left, again en route, and then once more as he stood beside her at the entrance to the towers. Nero cannot be trusted to refrain from slaughtering you where you stand.
True, Rhi agreed as they walked. But he could have killed me at any point. He knows it would be political suicide.
Didn't he use you as a target when he had the Tassin release dozens of high-velocity arrows? Lana asked.
He was being showy, Rhi said, sending a message in the most ostentatious way possible.
Or the most dangerous way possible, Lana shrugged.
And did he not intend to kill you when we were on Hul?
Dalin couldn't even get halfway through his own sentence without his face twisting, in disgust or pain or both. In actuality, Nero had intended to kill both of them.
The rules of the game were different then.
I'm here, on Kalu, with the universe as my witness. She extended both arms, as if to demonstrate the size and scope of the galaxy. He can't just make me disappear.
And what's to say the rules won't change again? Dalin pointed out. Nero twists the rules when it suits him.
Don't you think she knows that? Lana asked, before Rhi could answer.
Lana was even shorter than Rhi, which meant she was much shorter than Dalin. But she managed to speak down to him. She was the only one who did.
If the invitation this morning was any indication, we're walking into a death trap.
Rhiannon stared at her suspiciously. Then why are you smiling? She asked. Lana's features had the delicacy of a porcelain doll, so at odds with what Rhi had seen earlier, the intensity and her skill with the blade. Lana shrugged and tossed her braid behind her as she took her short strides.
Because I want to see how we get out alive.
Rhi pressed her lips together, hoping her silence would end the whole conversation. Maybe Dalin was right. Maybe it was insane to accept the invitation to meet with the man who'd killed Rhi's family, the one who'd turned her faithful trainer against her, and had tried to have her killed. But she needed a ceasefire. She needed him to pull the Uniforce out of Now Fruma and agree not to invade any neutral territories in the future. She stuck her hand in her pocket and sought out the familiar weight of the coin, turning it over and over again in her fingers, running her thumb along the groove that ran down its center. It may have been a mere souvenir, but Rhi saw it as so much more, a testament to her father's diplomacy and his ability to bring territories together. Dalin had assured her that aid had arrived on Now Fruma. Frontline physicians had cycled out new medics and took the injured away to safer locations nearby. She still didn't know Julian's status, whether he'd survived, where he was if he had. Ty Rayana had tried reaching out to no avail, which meant that his cube was off, and he hated turning his cube off. This was the know-it-all who had to look up every fact and figure, whose own cube sometimes couldn't keep up with his curiosity,
Dozens of queries running at once, always something to see and learn. If his cube was off, was he okay?
Rhiannon, Dallin said just as they arrived at the base of the West Tower. Unless your sole purpose is to kill him immediately, I can't imagine what you expect to gain.
The double doors of the elevator were closed, and the chrome reflected their image. It occurred to Rhi how strange a trio they made, and how the one boy she trusted with her life still stood by her side, would follow her up a tower to face the man who'd nearly ruined them. Once again, she thought of how Nero had forced Dallin to turn on his cube and thus break his vow to the Order. Something in him had changed, and she imagined his heart like a river stone, water seeping into its cracks, freezing with the change of season, fracturing it from the inside out. Nero had done this, and Rhi had to undo it. The double doors slid open, and three daisies fluttered out to meet them. Dallin swatted at the drone vision cameras and kept his head down, while Lana bared her teeth, which made the daisies skitter backward. The ride was quiet, tense. The elevator was made of glass, and they could see the intricate machinery that pulled them up the 70 flights. Enormous gears, ropes and pulleys, a delicate machine, 1,000 different ways it could break. What she'd meant to tell Dallin was that she was scared and needed him, to trust her, to follow her, precisely because what they were doing was so outlandish. He was her anchor, keeping her from losing herself in the undertow of Nero's deceptions. But now, as two daisies hovered above them, Dallin wouldn't meet her eye. Lana seemed oblivious. She leaned forward with her forehead pressed against the glass as the city fell below them. They were rocketed upward. Rhi felt her stomach lurch. She took a deep breath in, trying to compose herself, to prepare herself to meet Nero face to face once more. When they arrived on the 70th floor, the door slid open into a modern room. Expansive wooden floors bathed in light, with shiny furniture made up of hard angles and gleaming surfaces. Rhi channeled that ruler buried deep inside her, her legacy, and strode forward with Lana at her heels. After a second's hesitation, Dallin followed them, and then the daisies. It was all glass inside, quiet fountains, sleek. How second wave, Tyrianna would have said. It was nothing like the palace, which still reflected the tastes of the dynasty, their long, rich history captured in carvings and porcelain and tapestries. Things crafted by hand, centuries ago, handed down and preserved so that the Ta'ans would know from where they had come. The old way, her father's way. What did stand out was a lush plant that lined the walls. Its vines extended to the ground, with leaves fanning out on either side. A waxy deep green she hadn't seen since Dallin's wooden ship. Lana stood beside her and brought her hand to the leaf. A white residue came off and left fingerprints where her hand had been. They heard light footfalls from down the far corridor and turned. Always one for a dramatic entrance, Nero entered with his arms extended, flanked by a Ta'an at either side. A handful of daisies clustered around him. He likely went through the footage to ensure his best angles were broadcast, and nothing less. In a flash of recognition, Rhi realized the man on Nero's left was the same guard, a patch over his left eye, who'd led her to the medical facility where they had drugged Dallin and forced him to turn on his cube weeks before. Nero bowed so low Rhi thought he might fall. She willed her face to hide her disgust and tried to shape it into an approximation of a smile. Pressing her lips together tightly, the corners came up, and her face felt stiff, like ice. It was the best she could do.
Empress, he said. Safe at last.
His blue eyes widened, and his face wore a look of concern and relief. He's much better at faking it than me, Rhi thought bitterly. He motioned to a couch, his arm moving languidly through the air.
Sit.
I'd rather stand, Rhi said, just as Lana collapsed onto the white couch and gave it a bounce.
Please, Nero said. I insist.
Rhi snuck a look at Dalin, who stood behind the couch watchfully, his face neutral, though she knew he was monitoring everyone's movements out of the corner of his eye. She obliged, and noted the couch was rather cushiony, despite its angular design. Then she chided herself for becoming so easily distracted, and her whole body went rigid, alert, determined to focus. Nero had invited her for a reason. He wanted something. And she heard Vayrin's voice, his wisdom, whispering from the dead.
You need to be 3 steps ahead of your opponent. Always.
He'd said during their final battle, just before he tried to kill her. Just before he died. Dalin cleared his throat loudly, pulling her out of her memory. Daisy zoomed in toward her, and she held perfectly still as he gave her a questioning look. She'd missed something. Nero eyed them warily.
I was just saying, marveling, really, over the fact that you survived after the Elidio exploded.
That's why she was here, to be interviewed, to tell her story, so it could be picked apart. So he could catch her in a lie and use it against her for all the galaxy to see.
Those 2 weeks on the run were difficult, she said slowly, choosing each word carefully. But it was surviving a barrage of arrows this morning that was the real feat.
Nero touched his finger to his cube, and the daisies went dead. Rhi tried not to show her alarm, though she'd had no idea his cube was capable of that. She thought again of his ambition to find the Overrider and suppressed a chill.
You're a phenomenal actor, Rhi said coolly. It's why people like me.
He straightened up, a wry smile on his face. His nose was large, with a strong line to it. It looked disgustingly perfect on his face, as if every other feature had been placed there just to frame it. He'd always made her nervous, how immaculately handsome he was. But now something seemed odd about his face. A twitch in his lip, a squint of his left eye she had never noticed before. His energy was off.
I don't like you, Lana said casually, breaking the silence.
Rhi almost laughed. That, at least, got a frown from Nero. He was probably not used to being around people who spoke the truth so easily. The guard with the eye patch shifted just slightly behind Nero, the stunner on his belt in full view. He and Dalin were locked in a staring contest. A grimace passed over Nero's features as if he'd smelled something foul.
"For the love of the ancestors, lighten up, Yendit," he yelled back to his guard. Same goes for all of you, especially the Empress.
His gaze wandered from Rhi's head to her toes.
You wear your resentment in the line of your jaw, in your posture. You'd have me look more agreeable? The scowling doesn't suit your delicate features, Nero smirked. You're the rose of the galaxy. Think of the support you could have garnered early on if you only smiled a bit more.
Rhi read the subtext. If all she was a collection of delicate features and rose petals, then surely her job was to wear a pleasant expression and put people at ease. As if her face didn't belong to her, wasn't linked to the emotions she felt, the grief and turmoil swirling inside her.
She hated this man. How he did vile things and dedicated his entire existence to gaining more power. To what end?
She hated even more how he could cover up his wickedness with a superficial smile and a well-cut suit. She smiled now, squeezing the coin tightly between her thumb and the knuckle of her index finger.
I suppose I was too busy imagining all the painful ways I could kill you.
It was true, in a way. She had cultivated her mind and her fighting technique for ultimate vengeance all these years, though she'd been seeking vengeance on the wrong man. Until now.
But I still found time in my busy schedule of envisioning your death to win the public over.
He was so poised. He'd spent years in front of the media. And it showed. Sitting before him, Rhee could feel her inexperience.
You really ought to consider your image more, he continued. Wouldn't want everyone assuming you're just a daddy's girl here to extend his soft policies. You'll appear weak, just as he did.
If his policies seemed weak to anyone, it's to the weak-minded, the ones who believe violence and war are the only answers, Rhee fired back. He wouldn't happen to know anyone who fits that description. She leaned forward, an elbow on either knee, trying to take up as much space as possible. A thing she'd seen men do often. But for all her bravado, sweat gathered on the back of her neck. That specific phrase he'd used set off alarms all over her body. Daddy's girl.
In fact, I do, Nero leaned forward too. Only about half the galaxy.
Daddy's girl. She couldn't focus. Or properly exchange barbs with this pathetic excuse for a man. Truly her only pleasure in sitting across from him.
Daddy's girl. Daddy's girl. Daddy's girl.
It repeated in her head. It was the exact same thing the man had whispered at her when she faced the crowd in front of the palace, on her arrival in Cebu. The protester certainly hadn't been the first to call her that. Nor would he be the last. Still, the timing of it put her on edge.
Won't you finally explain why you instigated those attacks on the Empress's procession yesterday?
Dallin had grown tired of listening.
Me? He said, raising his eyebrows. As if I would stoop so low. As if I needed to.
He actually seemed offended by the suggestion. Was it possible he was telling the truth?
I didn't sully your homecoming, my dear. History did. You did. Those who've opposed Ta'an rule for years aren't going to just flip. I invited you here so that we could perhaps strike a deal, like civilized people. Find a way in which we work together to fulfill our mutual obligations. After all, two minds are better than one, Empress. She'd never work with you,
Dallin said. He spoke the words Rhee herself wished were true.
Rhiannon, is it going to be a habit to let a Fontizian speak for the crown?
Nero shook his head. He'd parted his thick, dark blonde hair to the side. The new style in the capital. Rhee ignored the question. She had her own agenda, and she'd indulge this as long as she could stomach it. What's in it for me if I agree to work with a liar such as yourself? But Nero cut her off before she could continue.
I'm not a liar, Empress. I've merely embellished.
You made the public believe in fictional threats just so they'd take your side in this war. You tipped them in your favor more and more each day. Rhee felt Dallin staring at her openly now, but she wouldn't meet his eye. She turned over the terrible truth of her situation. He was in control of her image. Uniforce was loyal to him. There were spies in the palace. Her throat closed as if he were strangling her. Like he'd strangled her legitimacy. Her ability to rule.
Tell me exactly what's fictional about a dying planet. About a lack of resources. And about having to share those precious resources with people who aren't even from here.
His northern accent came out as he made his last point. All the carefully constructed imagery he'd created fell away. He was worked up. His hair had fallen in front of his face.
Ancestors,
Rhee cursed.
You believe in this drivel.
Veins bulged in his neck, and Rhee caught a glimpse of a dark spot, triangle-shaped, just behind his ear. It unsettled her, this imperfection on a man always so perfectly groomed.
Is it really too much to ask you to see this perspective?
Yes, when the perspective is a bigoted one, she said.
I can't help it that this appeals to them, he said, gesturing to his face.
12 generations of the same stuff, and people start to think it's unfair. You, Ta'ans, being born into your power.
Enough!
Rhee stood up, and Yendit moved forward, prompting Lana to stand in defense. Nira wasn't wrong. She had been born into power, and for so long she'd seen it as a given, a right. But how could she address any unfairness or injustice under the thumb of a madman? Rhee desperately wanted to spar, to address this the only way she ever knew how. She wasn't cut out for diplomacy. But through her teeth, she asked,
What is it you actually want from me?
Nero frowned and ran his fingers through his hair.
It hasn't even occurred to you that I could possibly want to help you, has it?
No, she said. It hasn't. You're a compulsive liar and a sociopath.
Fine, he threw his hands up in the air. Look, there's still a large population that wants a Ta'an to rule. Loyalists and all that, he said with a wave. Rather than an agonizing political struggle or a power play where you try to convince my second waivers to jump ship and I try to convince your supporters to switch over, let's just combine forces.
It was ridiculous that he'd even think she'd fall for it. He opposed everything the Ta'an dynasty had stood for all these generations. Honor, bravery, loyalty, everything she stood for. And she would never forget his talk of whispering into cubes as he stood over Dalin's unconscious body. This was so obviously a trap she could have laughed. Nero wanted to keep her close so he could keep an eye on her, prevent her from finding out the truth about him and exposing it. He wanted to control her, manipulate her, get under her skin like he had with everyone else in the damn galaxy. There was no better way to find out the truth. Then from the inside, he wanted to keep her close. But who's to say she wouldn't be the one keeping an eye on him, controlling him, finding ways to undermine his rule?
Let's say I agree. Then what?
The question gave the room the feeling of a pressurization chamber. It crushed her where she sat. Behind her, Dalin and Lana said nothing. But she could feel the anger and tension in them. He leaned back, intolerably smug.
I gain access to the palace, to you. Just the occasional briefing or so, a drone vision spot perhaps. And you'll get the Tassin back, at least for your appearances. In exchange, you might find that people will start answering your comms, Empress.
She wondered how long it would take the Ta'an to kill her if she moved to strike Nero. I expect that this arrangement would include pulling the Uniforce troops out of now Fruma?
Effective immediately.
And our ultimate goal would be to move toward peace?
I think it would move us in a mutually beneficial direction, Nero replied.
After a pause, Rhee said,
I'll consider it.
Don't wait too long to decide. Nero smiled, a real, genuine, pearly smile of predatory satisfaction that made Rhee's stomach turn. He paused, eyeing both of her guards again. She saw every muscle in Dalin's body stiffen out of the corner of her eye. His anger was practically vibrating off his body. She could feel it coming at her in hot waves, but she resisted turning around.
After all, I wouldn't want something terrible to befall you, Empress.
She suddenly felt cold. She realized she'd balled her hands into fists unconsciously. He probably knew that her death now would be terrible press, even for him. But they both knew the truth. She was a target. The Empress was still far from untouchable, and Nero garnered more support with every day that passed. There were those who resented a young girl on the throne, one who had intentions of making decisions and challenging the existing order. The idea of her as Empress had been much more attractive when she was a withering rose on a far-flung moon, waiting to be plucked up and saved. She ushered Dallin and Lana quickly back toward the elevator. The daisies awakened suddenly and hovered over them as they passed.
"My next broadcast is in 2 days," Nero said behind them.
Rhi paused at the threshold of the doors.
"I'd be obliged if you were my guest."
Dallin glared out the window over the city. It was Lana who grabbed her arm and led her inside the elevator.
"Let's not delay, Empress," she said. "There's still much to do."
Part 2. The Abandoned. The Honorable Transcend. You of pure hearts must shed all desires that do not serve your purpose. The Teachings of Vadhan. Chapter 8. Kara. The frontline physician's medcraft was a piece of machinery so enormous and so ancient, Kara could barely believe the artificial grav still worked on board. It had blasted off from Naufruma 2 days ago, and Kara had been sure to be on it, putting as much distance as she could between her and the place where Ali had abandoned her. In another room, a drone vision personality was reciting Rhiannon's plummeting approval ratings. Again. Kara was thankful when someone turned it off. She wondered if the Empress would be better off if she hadn't put a call out for Jocelyn. The second waivers were using that as an opportunity to call her coronation into question and undermine her rule. Now, Kara fished the cylinder she'd found in the Lancer's dojo out of her pocket. It had nearly broken in the blast, and she'd had to dig it out from piles of rubble. It had become a habit, almost, a reflex, to touch it, to handle it, to watch it unfold its hollow. How many times had Kara projected its message, the one that had opened specifically for her? The coordinates led to Ralliere, which was apparently where the Overrider was hidden. Kara was en route there now. The craft she'd chosen included a pit stop on the very dwarf planet to which she was headed, and now there was little she could do but wait. When Kara had woken on Naufruma, she realized she'd been thrown by the blast and landed behind a concrete wall, miraculously, shielded from further harm. When she clawed free of the rubble, she saw the marketplace had been destroyed. The ground, the debris, her clothes and skin. The gray was everywhere, and she felt it seeping into the folds of her own brain. Ash blotted out the sky, and she breathed it in, coughed it out, choked on it like everyone else running past and around her. She'd been knocked out from the blast. Her clothes were in shreds, and the prayer beads Ali gave her were gone. Somewhere she'd lost her backpack, too, which contained the last of her meds. She searched for Ali, mystified how they could have gotten so far apart in the fighting. In the distance, her eye caught someone who looked just like him, boarding a craft without her. Kara hadn't even called out. She was so sure it wasn't him, and that he wouldn't leave her. But when she saw the blinking lights of the droid he had been dragging beside him, she knew for sure. And by then, she couldn't call out. Her throat had closed off, and she felt paralyzed with shock and humiliation. Ali had left her behind. Neither of them even looked back. Not once, even though she'd risked everything to save him. At least there was no room for heartache on the frontline physician's ship. Not hers, at least. It felt like Kara had heard every sound of suffering a human could make in these past 2 days. It made her forget her own headaches, the way her jaw hurt, the nightmares she had. The med floor was non-stop triage. Though her primary duty had been carrying food and blankets around, translating as needed. No one used their cubes here, Kara included. In some cases, people's had been damaged, mangled underneath the skin. But Kara just felt paranoid, safer if it was off. She knew of military-issued translation nets that you could cast around a room, but frontline physicians couldn't afford anything like that. And it wasn't like the military was going to donate one anytime soon. Droids could do literal translation of rudimentary language, but Kara could speak in a handful of languages and have an actual meaningful dialogue. Lydia had insisted she learn them and would do things like switch from Dirkatian and Raten mid-sentence just to see if Kara could keep up. In retrospect, it was hard to tell if Lydia had been relentless and exacting because she expected Kara would one day be a princess or a fugitive. And it was hard to tell if Kara was thankful for such a skill set or still pissed she'd been lied to, had her memory erased. Either way, there was something useful about that pain, a feeling she could channel when she translated for the patients. Kara was there to intercept all the words people use to describe pain and suffering, to parse through all the idioms and wade through the regional dialects and poetic expressions, to sharpen every description until the message was clear and concise. The medics couldn't diagnose anything until they knew what hurt, and how, and with what frequency. So Kara let the patients tell her their stories, and passed on only what she needed to. The rest of it she absorbed, each narrative a drop in the ocean. Sure, hearing about trauma took its toll, but organic translation really did a number on her head. Without her cube on, Kara's mind had to work double time, and even when she pushed herself, she could barely keep up. Plenty of times in the last few weeks, she'd wondered about how different life was without her cube. Harder, mostly. That absence of the cube computing away while you happily busied yourself with something else seemed foreign to her now. And at night, she almost enjoyed the feeling that her brain had shattered in a dozen different places. There was a kind of mental exhaustion that kept her from holding on to any thought for too long. It was the perfect antidote when you were trying to forget you'd been lied to and abandoned. Probably everyone felt like that. The doctors were too busy dropping down into various war zones, mostly vulnerable Fontizian territories that were getting the crap bombed out of them by Kalu's forces, to ask questions about why she was even there. The blowback from the conflict on Nau Fruma, which Uniforce was blaming on Fontis, even though it had been a resistance effort on the part of the WFC, overshadowed everything but survival. They were glad for the extra volunteers. They needed all the help they could get. In a cruel, practical way, the distractions were a kind of blessing. When she managed to push past the pulsing behind her eye, Kara's mind kept turning over the info Pavel had found, that the Overrider could be used in targeted memory deletion on a mass scale, and Emperor Ta'an himself had signed off on the research. Was no one above corruption? Kara understood now more than ever how critical it was to get to the Overrider before Nero did. She was close. They were zooming in on Raliere, a dwarf planet and major pit stop before the epic dead space between here and Fontis. She'd learned that Raliere wasn't neutral so much as entirely lawless. It was governed by the trade economy that burgeoned there, illegal and legal. Frontline was planning a touchdown soon to reload much-needed medical supplies. Kara rationalized that a re-up meant that it was the perfect time to swipe some meds that she'd needed to keep her headaches manageable. She hit a narrow set of stairs that was more like a ladder. The angle was practically vertical, and crawled down as she gripped the cold metal banisters. It was so cramped, Kara couldn't imagine anyone with a Fontizian or Raitan build fitting their shoulders through. Kara was used to small spaces. She'd spent plenty of time in the air, killing time when she was stuck on zeppelins on the Kalu-Navram line, waiting for Lydia, who worked on one of those illegal traveling labs. The medbay was bustling with activity. It always was. Nurses and medics walked briskly, dodging one another with armfuls of supplies, careening gurneys through the tight quarters, and shouting out orders. She took advantage of the chaos and did her part to look busy, walking fast like she had somewhere to be. There were glass windows that looked into the operating rooms. Three in a row were occupied with patients and the flurry of medics and doctors treating them. As long as she found an empty one, she could pick the lock on the cabinet inside and raid it. Kara caught her reflection in the thick, smudgy glass of the window. Her two-toned eyes, one a blazing green, and the other hazel, a few dark freckles surfacing on her cheeks and nose. The evidence was there, and she couldn't deny that she was here, too, for DNA meds. It was a last-ditch effort to prevent anyone from seeing the way her true features, Jocelyn's features, had begun to emerge. It wasn't just her eyes anymore. Even her tan cheeks were broadening, the shape of her mouth changing, filling in. She was almost recognizable as Rhiannon's sister, and she could only imagine how the resemblance would increase if she didn't take something soon. Not only was she on the run, but Kara was becoming someone she didn't know. Thankfully, all the cabinets were stocked with a supply of warper pills that were given to patients to manipulate their DNA and speed up their healing. They'd have to do for now. Just as she'd hoped, she looked into an empty operation room. But right when she moved to push the double doors open, she heard a frenzy of beeping. "Code red!" A droid rolled past her into the operating room, its robotic voice blurting out the same message on repeat as a nurse wheeled a patient past her. Blood had soaked through her WFC fatigues. Nicola, the head doctor, was on the nurse's heels. "Oh, what's going on?" Kara asked, chasing after her. She woke up and tried to gouge out her own cube. "What?" Nausea hit her, and Kara's skin prickled. "What are you doing in here?" Nicola started to ask, but the patient began to shout in Raitan. "You idiot!" the girl thrashed. She had a bloodied towel to her neck, and a medic standing over her applied pressure. It should have been disturbing, the blood and the tendons and the violence of it. But this was Kara's world now.
"I have no idea why she did it,"
the medic, Rusev, was saying to anyone who would listen.
"She's acting like a feral cat."
The girl hissed. "Take it out! Take it!" The Raitan words got lost in a gruesome gurgle.
"Need a translator here."
Kara pushed past Nicola, attacked by a mist of sterilizers as soon as she crossed the threshold. She came to the girl's side, elbowing out a nearby nurse. She caught a glance at the metal ID tag on the girl's wrist. It said her name was Issa. Issa kept yelling even while Nicola and two other medics moved her braids back and worked to staunch the flow of blood from her neck that had already drenched the table. When she started to choke, Nicola plunged two fingers into the ragged hole in her skin, while Rusev tried to repair the damage with silicone thread.
"It's updated. They'll come for me. I have to disable it."
"Who's coming for you?" Kara asked her in Raitan. "What update?" She realized her own hands were shaking. She didn't know how to steady them. Issa pulled her head away, and Nicola cursed as she lost her grip and blood spattered her protective mask.
"We're going to inject a numbing serum," Rusev said, holding a needle. "And then restart the cube. Tell her if she would just stay still."
"No!"
the girl yelled in Raitan. The word for cube was nearly identical in most languages. A collusion loan. She grabbed Kara's hand, blinking in shock.
"Don't resuscitate it! They'll track it!"
Kara's eyes started to throb again. She thought of Nero tracking her, tracking all of them. She remembered how he'd framed